This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And I'm Orion Samuelson saying good morning at 5 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock on this first Saturday of August. Good to be with you as always every week. Max Armstrong and I get together with some interesting people and share their stories with you here on the Saturday morning show. County and state fairs certainly underway, and this week had the opportunity to spend a day at a longtime farm show in Redwood Falls, Minnesota. The Farm Fest, the three-day show running Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. The thing I wanted to comment on, the landscape from the air. We flew Air Orion from Huntley, Illinois, up to Redwood Falls at about 6,000 feet. And this late in the growing season into early August, I have never seen the landscape as green or as lush as it looked from the air. The only areas that were not green were harvested wheat fields. And otherwise, green as could be, no brown spots. One area where they'd had a little hail that you could still see some damage. But this historical year in crop production and weather continues, and we'll be talking about that and the impact on the market a little bit later when Max sits down with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services. But as we do every Saturday morning, we sit down with Jim Fazell during the growing season, and we talk about flowers and vegetables and lawns and trees and gardens and all the beauty of nature. And so we'll be sitting down with Jim Fazell when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. I begin this morning by saying happy August to Jim Fazell as we continue in the world of agriculture, Jim, to see historical crop conditions in the good to excellent category. Can we say the same for horticulture?
We can. As a matter of fact, it has been an amazing year, except some places where it's been too wet, but those generally are temporary situations. But yeah, the gardens have done exceedingly well. I've got some stuff started to go in where I'm already done pulling out the broccoli and the beans are done, and we're ready to sow some more of those. But it's been a terrific year, and I think the grass is green. It's amazing. This time of year, we kind of think things are going to be dried up a little bit and slowed down, but no, things keep going.
But I know that when we move into August, Jim Fazell starts talking about repairing the lawn if you have problems.
Yeah, that's true, and that's the time to do it because actually the grasses that we grow here are fall grasses. They grow through the summer. They make seed and drop the seed in the fall, so that's the time to have the seed down if you're going to follow nature. And we think that maybe about the middle of August is the best time that you have the seed because you have plenty of time from then for the seed to germinate, to grow, to protect itself, the plants to protect themselves for the winter, and then to be ready to grow in summer and spring. They will have enough density so that they'll keep the crabgrass and other weeds from coming out, so this is the perfect time to do it. So really, mid-August repair lawns, you need to start now to be ready for it by the 15th. It'll give you a couple of weeks to monkey around with it to get it going. Actually, there's another thing we need to think about. Our long-range weather guy says that we're going to have increasingly moist weather, which is excellent for grass seed to germinate, and the temperatures are supposed to be somewhat cooler over this after this pretty hot start that we had there. Heat that we had this past week. I guess it wasn't August yet, but yeah, the late July heat. Anyway, lawn repairs. If you have a thatchy lawn, this is when you walk across and it feels like you're walking on a bed mattress because it bounces a little bit. You need to dig down and find out how thick the thatch is. If it's more than a quarter of an inch, you need to do something about it. A quarter of an inch, actually, the thatch is this brown fibrous stuff beneath the green part of the grass and the soil underneath it. A quarter of an inch is enough. You need a core aerify if you have a thatchy lawn. That's a machine that goes through and punches holes The holes need to be every 2 inches through the thatch into the soil. That's 36 holes per square foot. A lot of people don't do it that well. They think that maybe a hole every 6 inches is good. That's not doing the job. You need to make sure that you have a hole every 2 inches. If you have somebody come in and do that, go out with a stick and put it in the holes to find out where some of the holes are and how far apart they are. Now, if you only have bad spots, you need to just scratch them up or dig them out, dig out the duff, the thatch that's in there, fill with soil from elsewhere in the yard, and just sow seed in those spots. Gently rake it in. You might even tamp it down with your foot so that there's a little bit of firmness to the soil. Now, for a general renewal where the lawn is thin but otherwise okay, you need to cut it short. And I like to just slit seed over the entire lawn, not killing the grass or anything like that. That just inserts seed like a conservation drill would through the lawn so that you have a couple of rows of seed in between this grass that's already growing. That will thicken it up. That seed will come up. If you have a seed every 2 inches, it will make a plant, and you're going to have perfect cover. Now, if you don't want to do that, you can broadcast. And one way to do it would be to power rake the lawn and then broadcast the seed in it, but they're going to have to kind of rake it in a little bit. Now, if you need to completely renovate the lawn where you have a lot of grassy weeds, bare spots, it's a bit uneven and so forth, the first thing you need to do, whether you're seeding it or sodding it, is get rid of all of these weeds. Spray it with glyphosate, Roundup. Be careful that you don't get it on something you don't want to kill, because it will kill everything you put it on, just about. Wait 5 days, then mow short. You don't want to mow before you put the Roundup on, because you need to have leaves to absorb it. After 5 days, it's all absorbed by the grass. The grass plants are going to die, and there's none left in the soil, so you don't need to worry about it. Now, if you're going to seed, you can slip seed in two directions. That's the same thing you could do just for the general renewal. Or you could power rake, just exactly what we said. But if you've gone to all that trouble, it's probably a better idea to strip off all this old grass, modify all the imperfections like the low spots, the bumps, the worm castings, and so forth, then scarify the soil to loosen it a little bit and broadcast seed over the entire lawn, rake it in, roll it to firm it, and I like to cover with straw or one of these fiber mats. That keeps the grass moist after you've moistened it and keeps the sun from cooking it if it tries to come up. Now, if you're going to sod, you need to, again, strip off the old lawn, do your repairs, scarify to loosen the soil, and that's important because the sod needs to have something it can root into. If that soil is shined off and packed down because of the cutting of taking off the old lawn, the sod is not going to grow into it. Be sure the sod you get is fresh, grown on the same kind of soil as you have in your yard. If you're on black topsoil, get black topsoil sod. If you're on sand, get sandy sod and so forth. And lay the sod, making sure the joints are tight. You need to kind of kick them together to make sure they're tight. Then roll the sod to firm it down to the soil underneath it. Watering. If you seed, you need to keep it wet until it's upper growing, or you can let nature do it. And if we have the moisture that Greg talks about for this fall, maybe you don't need to water. But I would water anyway just to get the seed going. And once it's up, then maybe you can rely on nature. If you're sodding, keep the sod wet for 2 weeks or until it's knitted. And you can tell if it's knitted by going out and giving it a little tug to see if it's beginning to stick down to what's underneath it. Now, the mixtures that you need to use, Kentucky bluegrass is the thing that we grow around here, but we're becoming more and more used to seeing perennial ryegrass, and our breeders have done an excellent job of creating a perennial ryegrass that, I'll tell you, most people can't tell from Kentucky blue. So I like to use half Kentucky bluegrass, half perennial ryegrass, and I think if you go out and buy a package of seed, you're going to see that's pretty well what the seed producers are doing. If you're in the shade, you can add about 25% creeping red fescue. Now, there's always a question about some of these things like Scott's Water Smart, Pennington Smart Seed, and so forth. They do work. They tend to keep the seed a little bit more moist than it would if you just sowed the seed out there. So you can try those things. They're a little bit more costly, but they do work, and it's really up to you what you want to do. But anyway, if you get going right now, by the 15th of August, you're going to be ready to get the seed down or the sod down, and by fall, you're going to have a nice lawn, and by next spring, you're going to be surprised at how good it looks.
In the office here, I received a phone call from a lady who said I should ask you about choke grass or chokeweed. Are you familiar with that, chokeweed?
Not by that name, but you know what? If she could send a bit of it wrapped up in dry paper towel to us at WGN, we'll get it and take a look at it and either answer it on the air or send her a note as to what it is and what to do about it.
All right, sir. You have a good week.
And you too, Orion. Good talking to you.
Jim Fizell, talking horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show. It is 17 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock. We're broadcasting, as usual, on Saturday morning from our studio in Huntley, Illinois, where the temperature, 61 degrees at the moment. And looking out the window, the sky in the east beginning to get a little brighter. We are in for an absolutely beautiful day. Beautiful day for going to a county fair, and there are dozens of county fairs around the Midwest this weekend. A couple of state fairs that are underway, the Kankakee County, or the Indiana State Fair at Indianapolis. Max Armstrong is attending that fair this weekend. Of course, he grew up in the Hoosier State, so that makes sense. And then the Wisconsin State Fair is on at the State Fairgrounds in West Allis, just west of downtown Milwaukee. And both of those state fairs go through a week from tomorrow. And county fair-wise, well, in the Chicagoland area, I can at least mention the McHenry County Fair, just a few miles up the road from Huntley in Woodstock, and the Kankakee County Fair in Kankakee, going through Sunday at both of those fairs. This week, I had the opportunity to, as I said, fly up to Redwood Falls, Minnesota. Get a good look at the landscape up there. Last year, Minnesota had a record crop. It looks like they're going to have another record this year, but we learned more about that and other activity as we sat down with longtime friend and fellow farm broadcaster Lynn Kettleson of the Linder Ag Network, serving agriculture in the Minnesota and upper Midwest area. We talked about several things, but Lynn really wanted to talk about Farm Fest.
You know, Farm Fest is our major outdoor ag show, and we should name you honorary captain of Farm Fest. They absolutely love you here, and we're hearing that from the crowd out here, and it's just a nice event to come to. People enjoy looking at booths, but they also enjoy coming up and watching people on stage like yourself and other people. It's just a really nice, homey atmosphere.
Taking a look at the weekly crop progress reports, Minnesota continues to be impressive. Talk to me about it.
You know, I've never seen corn so uniform in my life. We have another record coming. And after last year, most experts said, that's not going to happen. You can't have 2 years in a row. We do. We've had a few spots with hail, but overall, it's just an outstanding crop from one end of the state to the other. It's a big one.
Is the price challenge going to hurt farmers in your state?
Well, it always does, but if you get those big yields, it does offset a bit. So that last year, we came out pretty well. We had an opportunity to sell earlier in the year, and I think a lot of farmers took advantage of that. So first thing is get the big crop. Second thing, worry about prices.
What segment of agriculture in Minnesota is being challenged the most right now?
The dairy industry is having its challenges. It has its ups and it has its downs. Pork industry is hanging in there, but prices have been low. Although for the consumer in the grocery store, my gosh, pork is a real, real bargain right now. And crop farmers, they're breaking even or making a little bit of money. Some are losing, but you know, overall, it's not the worst that we've seen in many, many years. We're hanging in there.
And we have watched the Corn Belt and the Soybean Belt move farther north every year, haven't we?
You know, Elwin Taylor of Iowa State says now South Central Minnesota is the center of the Corn Belt, and we're getting 200 bushel corn in northern Minnesota. The fastest growing soybean area is the Fargo-Moorhead area in the country. So it is moving north, but, you know, it's still in those Midwest areas in the south, too. It's just getting bigger.
Indeed, it is getting bigger. Lynn Kettleson sitting down with me at Farm Fest in Redwood Falls, Minnesota on Wednesday of this week. Incidentally, it was a big day for Lynn because his company, Linder Ag Network, celebrated its 40th anniversary, and it was Lynn's birthday. I didn't ask him what that number was, but as a result, his company served 1,000 cupcakes to people in the audience, and a good time was had by all. Well, that show is over and done. It's history for 2016, but the big one is coming up, and Max and I will talk about Farm Progress Show when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
We see it every year. The summer just flies by, and before you know it, it's time for the Farm Progress Show. It's back in Iowa this year. With us at the desk is Matt Youngman, National Events Manager for Penton Agriculture. That Farm Progress Show, as it moves back and forth between Illinois and Iowa, continues to draw a very big crowd. What's the secret, Matt?
Well, I would say that it doesn't necessarily have a lot to do with us. It's what the exhibitors do at the show. You know, you look at a company like John Deere, who uses it as a place to do their product unveilings. It's the work that all those companies do to make the show great for the visitors.
They've really stepped up, and the permanent sites enhance that immensely, do they not? I mean, because they know they're going to be there year after year after year at the same location, they can put money into it.
They can put money into it. You know, at the very least, they can put a gravel base down so that they have a nice solid base from which to build their exhibits, all the way to putting up permanent signs, permanent buildings, you know, all permanent infrastructure, three-phase electricity, all the things they need to run the air conditioning so that they can really work that game of one-upping the next exhibitor down the street.
The growth in the number of exhibitors has been interesting to watch. I mean, I expected it to plateau with you know, agriculture having a finite number of farmers, but the technology and then the number of exhibitors just keeps on climbing.
It keeps going up, and I think that the technology is the reason. You know, there's always that next company that has a drone or has an app or has something that's on a smartphone or something that's on a that's computer based or digital based, and so there's always a backlog. You know, we're already sold out for this year's Farm Progress Show and Husker Harvest Days, and with a wait list for both events. So it's great to see that demand continues to come from new exhibitors.
Matt, you reminded me earlier that we sat down together for our first interview at Farm Progress 21 years ago. 21 years. The biggest change I've seen is the air-conditioned tent. What's the biggest change you've seen?
That's probably it. You know, I think the two biggest changes I've seen since we started doing this together has been the move to permanent sites, which you know, has made it a lot easier for the exhibitors to put on a good show, and the date change. Going from being at the end of September to being at the end of August allows growers to come. You know, if back when we were right there on the cusp of harvest or having our event during harvest, it was hard for the farmer to justify coming. Now that we're at the end of August, it gives they have a couple weeks, most of them, before they're going to hit the field. I think those have been the two biggest changes I've seen happen.
And it worked well with the exhibitors. They were able to get their crops planted on time and have them ready to at least look it.
Yep, that's right. We plant, we're planting 78-day corn in Boone in order to have field demonstrations, and 99-day corn when we're in Decatur, which is really, really early for that geography. But it gets ready to go, and we're able to put on demonstrations there at the end of August.
And I still hear a lot of talk from farmers about walking behind the combine and seeing what comes out of the other end.
Well, it's a good shopping opportunity for them, and or maybe a good opportunity to brag if you're really partial to one particular color or another, but a nice chance to go out and watch those machines compete side by side.
And a final reminder on the dates of the show soon here?
August 30, 31, and September 1st.
Thank you very much. We'll look forward to seeing you there. Matt Youngman, who is the National Events Director for Penton Agriculture. And we're at 27 minutes before 6 o'clock on the start of a beautiful day. That sky in the east getting brighter and brighter. Sunrise soon here. As I said, my thermometer at Huntley, Illinois, at our studio showing 61 degrees at the moment. So we'll not only have sunshine, but we'll have more comfortable temperatures as well. Part two of the Saturday Morning Show, and Max will talk markets with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services a little bit later. But right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson on Samuelson Says, and this morning's topic, Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership. We'll talk about it in a minute or so, but let's talk about maybe your favorite appliance in the kitchen. I'm enjoying a cup right now from my favorite appliance, the coffee maker. But the coffee maker needs work, and the folks at Wink Products Company have the product that will make it work even better. Wink Products Coffee Maker Cleaner. the perfect cleaning solution to remove those nasty mineral deposits that make coffee taste metallic and cause your coffee maker to clog. So pick up this fine Wink product, Wink Coffee Maker Cleaner, and see what a difference it can make. Learn more about that product and all the others provided by Wink at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. Now, Samuelson says, the ongoing strong opposition to trade agreements expressed by both candidates, Republican and Democratic, continues to bother me a great deal because our nation depends on trade. And here is the current situation. When Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, she supported the 12-member trade agreement. Now that she's running for president, she is opposed, saying that it should be renegotiated. But she, of all people, should know it cannot be renegotiated because after years of deliberation, when the 12 countries signed off a few months ago, the agreement was it would go back to their countries for ratification. No changes, just a yes or no vote, up or down, but no change. Then there is Donald Trump, who is against anything that looks like a trade agreement, or so it seems, strongly opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement, and he'd like to tear apart the 30-year-old North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, that has worked successfully to promote trade between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. But now there's a third party involved who would like to see the Trans-Pacific Agreement signed. That's President Barack Obama. As a matter of fact, this week he promoted the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal and committed to getting the deal done when he welcomed Singapore's prime minister to the White House. Obama wants the Congress to approve the 12-nation trade deal, which he sees as a central part of his economic and foreign policy legacy, and he would like it done before he leaves the White House on January 20th. Congressional leaders, though, are pessimistic about the odds of ratifying the deal either during the short session in September or during the brief lame duck session after the November 8 election. But it sets up an interesting situation. President Obama's fellow Democrats panned the trade agreement at their convention, but now the president wants to see it done and on his desk for his signature before January 20th. Apparently, the fight isn't over yet, and if you feel strongly about the importance of trade to the ag economy and the U.S. economy, talk to your representative or senator. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks and a late development in that situation came this week when House Speaker Paul Ryan said he saw no point in bringing up the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal for a vote in any lame duck session of Congress later this year after November elections because, quote, we don't have the votes. He said, as long as we don't have the votes, I see no point in bringing up an agreement only to defeat it. The words of the Republican House Speaker, Paul Ryan, from Wisconsin. Well, the markets continued to be most interesting. Cattle producers had a little better week this year than they have for the past several weeks, as we saw cash cattle bring better prices in the Southern Plains, up about $2 from last week. But this morning we'll talk the grain market. We'll talk the crop situation when Max sits down with Greg Groh at Archer Financial Services, when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show.
Each weekend, it's a pleasure to have at the microphone with us respected market analysts, advisors, brokers, counselors. Greg Groh from Archer Financial Services is in the studio with us this weekend. You and your colleagues, of course, have watched this crop, these corn and soybean crops grow and grow and grow, and they look so good now. I know there are those pockets of exceptions. There's Ohio.
There is a big chunk of Michigan. Then you've got South Dakota, a little bit of Iowa, a little bit of Missouri. Those are fairly small spots on the drought monitor map. But in between those areas, it looks mighty fine.
Well, crops look very strong. And, you know, we've had a warm July compared to last year and a warm July compared to history. But the rains came very timely for most people. You mentioned those areas that are in a tight spot right now, and yields are not going to be as good as they could be in those areas. But generally, the crop is in very favorable condition. And when you see crop condition ratings as high as they've been here through late July, historically that tells us we have a strong propensity for above trend line yields.
Has there been enough bearishness put into this market, priced into the market ahead of the crop report that's coming up, that report may not have much negative effect on prices?
Well, that's the interesting question. Most think that, you know, the data and so forth suggest the USDA probably doesn't change much in the August estimates as far as its yield estimate. The possibility is there we could see an increase just due to these crop conditions. Private estimates, though, are higher, and we've seen a lot of talk of 170-plus national corn yield starting to creep into the marketplace.
And even talk of a total corn crop size of 15 billion bushels. That's a staggering number for those of us who remember 12 not long ago.
Well, remember the acreage was up in the June report over to March intentions, which was a little bit of a surprise, and a lot of folks didn't feel we could carry above trend line yields this year, given history that after two or three years of that, normally we don't see it going into the third and fourth years. But it's there. The weather has been generally very favorable to help this crop along very well.
Soybeans, too, look very good at this point of the game. In fact, USDA in the weekly crop analysis last week actually showed an improved rating of the beans. They're getting better.
Well, that's right. And you've had, you know, some areas got some very good rains just at the end of July here. And we've got more general moisture in the forecast, at least normal type moisture for the month of August. Unlike corn, crop ratings at the end of July don't always give us a true read on our final yields for soybeans, but it does look like with the forecast we have for August, we should be able to maintain strong yield potential, and there's a lot of talk of 48 to 49 bushel national yield in the market right now.
Other than double crop soybeans after soft red winter wheat, the crop is pretty well made, isn't it?
Certainly is. You know, there's a lot of feeling right now that it's going to, with the forecast we have, that it's going to be very hard to make a dent in things right now.
Now, when I say that, I'm immediately prompted by a grower who will say, well, no, wait just a minute, pal. It's not in the bin yet. Farmers get more concerned about that than the market does, don't they?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, you always have the possibility of an early end to the growing season or something like that that could come at us that we don't see right now. But we look at some of your longer-term forecast maps, it looks like we're going to maintain this warmer-than-average trend right into the fall. You know, that could mature some of these crops a little earlier than we'd like to see, which might, you know, take the top end off of things. But certainly there's a lack of threat right now, given where we are. And if you compare that to some of the talk back in May and early June when traders were thinking about a dry or a drought type of an August, it certainly hasn't been the case.
I talked to an elevator owner the other day who said, you know, I'd kind of like to see rain delays during harvest. He said that gives us a chance to catch up, and especially when you're staring at a big crop coming in.
Well, that can be the case, and we'd like to see the crops mature normally out there in the field so that we have maximum type yield potential. Whether or not we see kind of logistics issues, there's so much more on-farm storage now than there's ever been, more industrial storage at the end-user level. Talking to people in the transportation regions, they feel there's going to be adequate capacity to move the crop around versus, say, where we were two or three years ago. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a big crop. It probably is, a lot of it's going to all come at once. So
covered hopper cars and barges should generally be where they are needed.
It seems that way. I've just visited with some people. I was up in Minnesota last week talking to some people about that, and it generally appears that there's going to be adequate capacity across the regions.
You know, when you talk about storage, many elevators have found it very easy to expand their storage outside. I shouldn't say easy. It's not a cakewalk, but they've learned how to do it years ago in terms of routinely piling it out on the ground and putting some kind of a cover over it in most instances.
I think people have gotten very good at it. There's a lot of new technology in that area, and it seems like it's going to be, it should be a big part of this year's harvest also.
That's the corn. Now, soybeans need to find a home under the roof somewhere.
Mm-hmm. That's definite, but, you know, we have a lot of demand right now. I hear that there's a good lineup starting to build for to take a lot of beans here this fall out of the Gulf, and so it's just going to be getting them down there in a timely fashion, and the export book looks very strong right now.
Are we the only game in town now for many months?
I think so right now, going into the end of the year, definitely. It looks like a lot of business is focused on us. We saw a decline in the total scope and size of the South American crop right at the end. It's brought new business to us. We factored a lot of that into our balance sheet forecast, but it looks like that that business is here. We've seen very strong offtake here just recently.
Obviously, South American farmers will be preparing to respond to plant, and they're looking at the same price signals. They cannot be encouraged by these prices.
No, but you do have places like Argentina who have changed their tax regime right now, especially as in regard to corn and wheat, and we're already hearing a shift in acreage there away from soy towards especially corn, with a lot of talk in the market that corn acres could expand, say, 25% in Argentina over last year.
25%? That's
25%,
a big number.
And they've left their tax on beans, and they've dropped it completely on wheat and corn, and I think that's a financial incentive for growers in that area to expand wheat and corn acreage in the coming year.
You know, while we're talking about South America, I can't help but think of all the attention being given the Olympics and the problems that Rio has. Anyone who ever traveled there had to be shocked a few years ago when it was announced that Rio had beaten out Chicago as a choice for the Olympic Games. The city's been a cesspool for years. Mm-hmm. No offense to, and I love Brazilian people. I love traveling in rural Brazil. I love getting out into the countryside. But that city has been a mess in more ways than one for decades.
Well, it's a very large city with a lot of growth, a lot of problems. It's interesting, when the Olympics were awarded there, they were right on the top of a massive commodity boom. The economy was seeing some of its best growth in history. Commodity prices, iron ore prices, all the things that Brazil was involved with were very strong, and things looked very, very good for them as they bid for the Olympics. And now here we are a few years later, and things are not so good economically down there and politically, and they've struggled to pull this together. But it'll be interesting to watch. I'm very hopeful we'll watch the American team and see how things go.
Agriculture remains a very important part of their overall economy, does it not?
Very much. It's, commodities in general are a very big part, whether it's on the mining side, the energy side, and, of course, agriculture. I think, it's been a very big part of the economy and will continue to be a massive part of the Brazilian economy.
Mining, let us not forget, that's an industry in trouble, too. Not just in the United States, where coal mines are shutting down left and right as coal-fired generating power plants are being shut down by Washington. But this is something you hear, for example, in Australia, where mining is a big industry competing with agriculture.
Well, it's all about the overall boom-bust cycle that we see time and time again across the resources, natural resources, and commodities. And we've been through a big boom cycle, and now we're at the bottom or maybe at the trough of a down cycle. But it's about demand and supply. And when prices are high, we increase supply. When prices are down, supply tends to shrink, and we start the process all over again.
We can't have a discussion without talking about China and in regard to that soybean demand. It's going to stay constant, relatively constant, is it not?
I think so. I think the overall structural reasons for the soybean demand in China remain. There has been talk recently that after 15 years of growth in soy demand, imports from China to the world, to obtain the world supply, maybe that growth is slipping. I know that some private forecasters mentioned a few weeks ago that they believe we might see a down year in the coming year for their imports, but that's yet to be seen. And I think that in general, their appetite for soy will remain very strong.
There is so much political chatter with the presidential campaigns continuing here into the home stretch. We did see a report this week that the Clinton campaign has reached out to some of the California environmental officials, trying to get their grasp on how to change the renewable fuels mandate. Regardless of whether or not, one campaign or another is successful, whoever's in the White House, if they change the renewable fuels mandate, it has significant ramifications for agriculture here in the heartland, doesn't it?
Oh, certainly. You know, corn is over a third, if not almost 40% of total demand right now on the ethanol side. And so any kind of a changes there structurally that reduce the importance of that industry here would have a dramatic effect given where we stand right now in the farm economy.
Well, we'll continue to watch. Thank you for all of your insight and your visits from time to time. It's always nice to see your smiling face, Mr. Groh.
Well, thank you, Max. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Greg Groh with Archer Financial Services.
It is 7 minutes before 6 o'clock on the start of a very pleasant Saturday across the Midwest, going to county fairs, state fairs, tractor auctions. That's old tractor auctions. I did want to add a footnote to the discussion that Max was having with Greg Groh a minute ago on the soybean demand in China and how the demand has surprised a lot of people by growing instead of diminishing. Because the U.S. Department of Agriculture yesterday reported that exporters sold 498,000 tons of U.S. soybeans to China for delivery in the new crop marketing year that starts September 1st. This was the eighth consecutive trading day on which USDA confirmed a soybean deal with China or unknown destinations, bringing total sales over that eight-day period to 2,800,000 tons of soybeans. There has been concern expressed by those of you in the cattle industry over the action on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange live cattle contracts, the up limit, down limit, and the back and forth, questioning the worthiness of the live cattle contract. Well, CME Group is working on it. Yesterday, CME Group announced it will take a number of actions designed to enhance live cattle futures markets. These new measures, based on continued collaboration with feedback from the cattle industry, as well as the results from an independent study conducted by Informa Economics. Three steps are being taken. Number one, seasonal discount at Worthing, South Dakota delivery location. Number two, revised grading and quality specifications. And number three, delayed listing of additional contracts. In a couple of weeks, we're going to visit with people at the CME Group and share the visit with you here on the Saturday Morning Show to talk about what these actions could mean to the contract. But in the meantime, if you want more information on the changes and the actions being taken by CME Group, here is the website, cmegroup.com/livestock. cmegroup.com/livestock. So, and we'll be talking about it in, I think, 2 weeks from today. We're going to have some guests from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Again, the folks at the CME Group will be at the Illinois State Fair on Tuesday, August 16th. That's Salute to Agriculture Day, and I'll be there again this year to serve as MC for the Salute to Agriculture breakfast, 9 a.m. on the 16th, and then at 4 p.m. the auction gets underway, the commodity auction, and that's followed by the governor's auction of livestock champions at the Illinois State Fair, August 16. Look forward to being there with you for that. One more South American comment. U.S. ethanol plants and traders are rushing to sell biofuel to Brazil because of tightening supplies and logistics in the South American market that gives the U.S. a rare opportunity to ship south during the peak sugarcane harvest. U.S. ethanol plants are pumping out a record 1 million barrels per day, taking advantage of cheap and plentiful corn feedstock here. But in Brazil, the sugarcane price has turned sharply higher. In Brazil, they make ethanol out of sugarcane. Because of the increased sugar prices at harvest time there, they're now looking at maybe importing ethanol from the United States. And finally, as we looked at yesterday's action at the Chicago Board of Trade, we saw strength in wheat, soybeans, cattle, both live and feeder. Pretty good day yesterday with August beans up 13 cents and September wheat up 13 and a quarter cents a bushel. Finally, it's interesting to see what continues to go on from the anti-GMO people who would deny food to millions of hungry people if they could ban genetically modified organisms. Still have yet to see a death certificate of anyone dying from consuming food with GMO. But now, another twist to the story. The U.S. has taken another step toward clearing the way for a trial of genetically modified mosquitoes in Florida as a way of reducing populations of mosquitoes that carry the Zika virus. The Food and Drug Administration said yesterday a field trial testing Intrexon Corporation's genetically engineered mosquitoes would not have a significant impact on the environment. And the announcement came as Florida officials ramp up aerial pesticide spraying of a neighborhood in Miami, Florida. It could be a step toward really curing the problem. But guess what? Catherine Watkins and other groups are saying, oh, can't do that. Can't use genetically modified organisms on mosquitoes. It just isn't right. Okay, it just isn't right. Well, that's our time here on the Saturday Morning Show. As always, we appreciate your opportunity to join us on Saturday morning. Max Armstrong and I look forward to it. Max will see you down at the Indiana State Fair today, and we'll see you somewhere along the road as well. But thank you for joining us on Chicago's very own WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.